Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 27, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am a very road-weary Scott Long.
Yes, you were calling in from, I guess it was the east coast of Florida, I guess that's
the
what
lovely
call it.
The lovely La Quinta on Peters Road here in Plantation, Florida.
Is that the one we stayed at together last time?
It is. Yeah. It is. It is not the hotel I booked, but it is the one I'm in today.
So, what does that mean?
Well, you know, there's another La Quinta that opened. It literally is like 2 blocks from this one.
Okay.
You know, I almost thought it reminded me of that whole Onion story from a couple years ago. The headline was, new Starbucks opens in bathroom of existing Starbucks.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. I'm like, oh my God, there's 2 La Quintas, like, you can actually see the other one. But, so I booked the other one, and I got there, and the internet wasn't working well, and of course, you know, we had to Skype the show, and internet is, oh, you know, kind of sort of important when you're on the road doing business. So I had them rebook me into the La Quinta that you and I always stay in. And all is well here as far as the internet, as you can tell. I'm clear as a bell. But, you know, I went down this morning to the lovely free breakfast that the good folks here at La Quinta put out for us.
Excellent.
And I got to tell you, Chris, I no longer like people.
You're a misanthrope?
I used to be a happy-go-lucky kind of guy, you know, you know, whatever happens, smile nice. But no more. I hate people.
You're a misanthrope. Welcome to the club.
I get down there to get my breakfast. All I want, Chris, all I want is just a stupid bagel and a glass of apple juice.
Uh-huh.
Not too much to ask. But there is 3 women, and I'm going to say they're large women, but I'm not hating on large women because I'm about 2 years away from being a very large man myself.
Yes.
But they had 3 bags each strapped around their shoulders. I don't know whether they're a friend was bringing the camel around, and they weren't able to put the bags on it right now. But they literally took up the entire breakfast bar, and I couldn't get in there to get my juice or my muffin or my bagel or even a pack of that nasty oatmeal. And they were there forever, and so I got halfway through the USA Today before they finally got out of there. And then some guy was buttering his damn toast right in front of the plates.
Uh-huh.
The only place where I can get my plate. And so I kept waiting and reading, and every time I finally went up there and just bumped him out of the way and got my stuff and went back and read. And then I looked up, every 5 minutes, he was buttering his damn toast. How much toast was this guy eating?
All you want to do is have a nice meal without being bothered by anyone, right?
Exactly. But people just conspired to piss me off. So I'm a little on edge today.
I think we have that printed on our cocktail napkins at the club. The Loyal Order of the Misanthropes. That's our slogan.
Oh.
We're a little pissed off today. That's our slogan.
But I'll tell you the people that I'm not ticked off about, and those are the good folks over at Dania Highlight. That's the whole reason I'm down in South Florida here. Our good friend Marty Fleischman over there, he runs an excellent celebrity tournament every month for fans here in South Florida. They know the Tard.
Yeah.
Dan Le Batard,
yep.
Big personality down here, and they do a tournament every month, and I decided to come down and play, and, you know, I gotta say I did all right. I didn't cash, but, you know, I did all right.
Yeah, you finished 54th, I think you told me.
Yeah, they had 271 players, I think, so I made a good run. Our other good friend, Nick Sordo from the Sun Sentinel, who's also kind of a B-list celebrity in this, like I was, was doing well when I left, so I hope he ended up cashing. But it's a good tournament. You know, they pack a lot of people into that that room there, and they give away a lot of swag and stuff. It makes my our swag shelf look a little, I don't know, B-list. I tell you, some guy won a box of Hostess Twinkies, and he stood on the chair and screamed as loud as you can and did this little dance, and it was the funniest thing I've seen. So I'm thinking that we might need to raid the Andy Up coffers and add some Twinkies to the swag shelf.
Yeah, because the shelf life on Twinkies are forever. They'll never go bad.
Looking forward to getting home. You know, to see my wife for about 7 minutes before I take her to the airport and she leaves again.
Yeah.
But Saturday, I am playing out at the Derby Lane, the 600-600 tournament. Satellited in before I left on this business trip. Here's an interesting scenario that I think the listeners, I would like to have them weigh in on. The satellite was 27 players. Top two got a seat in the $660 seat in the tournament, right?
Right.
Third place gave $575. All right, so yeah. 3 out of 27. You know, all right. So fortunately, I got down to the final three, so I was going home with anything. And there's a lot of talk at the table about the fact that even third place wasn't a bad deal because you just had to buck up another $80 or so to get in the tournament, right?
Right.
So there's a guy at the final table who was kind of short stacked when we got there, and he went ahead and bought a $500 voucher to get into the tournament. He bought it for $250, so, you know, pretty good deal, half price, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
And so, you know, to use it, then he would have to pay an additional $160. So it's, you know, in the end, $410 to get into a $660 tournament, okay?
Yeah.
So he apparently wasn't very confident that he was going to be one of the final three, so he bought this, right?
Right.
He went on a run, and we ended up, he was in the final three with us and the other guy. All right, so here's his situation. He's already paid $250 for a voucher, and he's guaranteed at least $575. So I had one bad hand, and I got short stacked, and I turned to this guy, and I'm like, you know, hey, if I go out next, you'll obviously win a $660 seat. Can I buy that voucher that you just bought for $250, the same price you just paid? And he shook his head, and I don't know about that.
What does he think he's going to get for? Is he going to sell it like a scalper on the street?
Well, you know, and that was another part of this discussion is after he bought that, a lot of people were saying that the going rate for those things for $200 were already overpaid a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, then I kind of tried to do the math for him a little bit. And I said, you know, I really want to finish third myself because if I buy that voucher from you for $250, I pay the additional $160 and I win $575. I'm going to play in the same tournament that you're going to play in, and I'm going to I've already won 100 and some bucks.
Yeah.
And so I was almost encouraging him to do it too, and I kept talking to him. Finally, I think the light bulb went off. And he's like, ah, I see what you're saying. And then he pushes all in the next three hands and loses. So I was foiled in my plan to steal 100 some bucks from
him. Oh, man. So you shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I'm a nice guy. I was just trying to do the math there for him. But here's the bigger question for the nation. Let's just take this guy out of the equation. If you know that people are selling vouchers or even full seats for about $230, $200, $300, would you have taken a dive in the third spot to take the cash? It makes mathematical sense, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I was talking to the other guy that also won a full seat with me, and he said, you know what? Hey, I told my girlfriend I was going to come out and play in this tournament, and I was going to win a seat in the event. And, you know, I want to go home, and I want to show her the certificate that I won, to show her that I actually did what I set out to do. And you know what? It doesn't make mathematical sense. It's certainly not a practical sense, but there might be something to that argument.
Yeah, but you know pride is one of the seven deadly sins, you know. I mean, you shouldn't let it get in the way of making, or at least, you know, getting gluttony and, you know, having some more money. I don't know. I just feel like I would rather make money and say, hey, look, okay, I didn't do that, but look, I bought you this nice heart-shaped box of chocolates with the extra money I won. So, okay, I didn't sit out and do what I wanted to do, but look, I got some extra cash here, and now we can go have dinner or something, you know.
I love that you made your point with the seven deadly sins by saying that it can't get in the way of gluttony.
I know, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Nice. Well played. Nice hand.
Thank you. That was exactly my point. Don't give up on one seven deadly sin for another.
Man. Well, now, of course, there's no guarantee that there's anybody else going to be selling it. I'm sure there were, but You know, I mean, I guess that's the other side. You know, take the $575 and you can't find anybody to buy it from. But at that point, then you're just putting an extra $80 in. So I guess it was probably worth the risk to. But you've been doing quite well locally as well.
Yeah, you know, we played the home game. I had a great time in the home game. I was found myself down like $90 after like 45 minutes, and I thought,
yeah, that's right.
Not again. Why do I have to keep doing this? I keep freaking losing a ton of money early in our home game and then having to scratch all the way back. So I'm playing really well at the end of the home game. And, of course, 6 o'clock rolls around, and, you know, the wife wants to take you out for your birthday bash. How dare
right.
she?
Yeah, I know. She's like that.
You have to go to Arigato's and get the egg roll, and, you know. So, of course, you have to cut the home game right at 6 o'clock. When I'm down $15, I'm, like, almost even. I'm so hungry to get even. And I think I have a gambling problem now. But anyway, you know, your house is so close to the Silks, one of our local card rooms here. I was like, you know, I'm going to go over there and just play in the soft 50-cent and dollar game because it's just so soft, and I did so well last time I played there, and I really want to get that $15 back. Feel like I have something to account for my day, you know, other than just sitting around with a bunch of hairy, smelly old guys, you know, at your house. So I get to the Silks, and someone who joined our home game this week named Brian, he was at the home game, did really well, but he made a decent ride to get to your place, so he didn't want to go home right away. He figured there's another card room nearby. So he shows up there, too, and we end up playing at the same table. I ended up taking my $60 and turning it into $330 playing 50 cent $1.
Wow, five upped.
And, well, actually, I think I had to rebuy one, so I four upped, but... Okay. The reason why I rebought, too, was Brian called my huge raise when I had ace-ace with queen-10. He flops a 10, and he flops a 10. I make a big bet. He calls. I got him trapped, and he turns a queen, and we get it all in. Of course, he has two pair and then fills up on the river with another 10. So I went broke there, so I had to rebuy. But I felt at him a few more times after that, so that felt pretty good. Got all my money back from him. But a couple of things happened while I was there, and I thought were interesting. One, he was straddling a lot, and he was on my left. And every time he straddled, not every time, but when it got around to him, if they just all limped, he liked to raise. So he was short stacked on one hand, and I had ace, king of diamonds, and I had a huge stack. You should have seen my stack, Scott. I made a little fortress out of it. All these dollar chips, $330 chips, you know, it was massive. So... I decided to just call the straddle thinking that he would raise, and then I trap him later. And I had everybody covered at that table like 45-1 chip ratio because they all buy in for $20, you know. So I decided to try to trap him. Indeed, it works out. He makes it like 10 to go after it was $2, folds around to the woman on my right who calls, and then I go all in. Now he folds instantly, but it gets back to the woman, and she calls and turns over 3-2 offsuit.
Yes.
Before the flop comes out, I said, how much do you got? Because I know you're winning this hand. I counted it out. Sure enough, a 3 on the flop, and I lose to a 3-2 all-in call of my ace-king suited. And I thought, wow, this woman really, really wants action. So I trapped her later on, and I trapped her husband later on, too. I literally felted every single player at the table, plus a few more who had come down earlier and left. It was a lot of fun. I felt really good to play that way. But one more situation came up that really just I didn't know what to do. And it's one of those ethical things that I really want to bring up real quick.
Ethical or legal?
No, this one was ethical.
Okay, because there's not a difference, right?
No, there's definitely a difference. A guy on my right raises to the normal amount. I call, and then a guy in one of the the other guy behind me who had a smaller stack, like $30, calls as well. So the flop comes like 8-4 deuce with like two spades. Now, I have a pair of deuces because I had ace-deuce when I called the raise. And I knew the guy on the right probably had like ace-king, ace-queen or something. It turns out that he checks. And so I'm like, all right, I'll check. Maybe he's trying to trap with a big hand, but I doubt it. He'd done it before when he missed a flop, so I felt like he didn't have a hand. Well, the other guy now shoves, the third player. And it's like 26 more bucks to me. The under-the-gun guy folds, so I don't have to worry about him now. So I'm thinking, why would he shove? Is he really trying to protect against the flush draw here if he had a monster? So I'm starting to think, okay, I think maybe he's on the draw. And as I'm contemplating, I'm looking. You know how that 50-cent dollar table, Scott, is against the glass wall?
Right, yeah.
Well, it was nighttime, so outside against the glass wall was all pitch dark. And he's looking at his cards straight up in the air. Like, and I, as I'm contemplating, I'm just looking out thinking, you know, what's his hand? What's his reason for betting like this? And I notice his cards in the window.
Oh, my God.
But now, I saw an ace, and that's all I saw. I couldn't tell if it was the ace of spades. And as soon as I saw it, I looked away, and I thought, I can see this guy's hand. So I said, hey, man, I just want to let you know that I think you're probably on a draw. I said, but I call. He's like, yeah, I got an ace. He turns over ace, king of clubs. And he didn't even have a draw. He just had two overs and was bluffing. And he was dead to a king, and he missed, and I won a pretty decent-sized pot with a pair of deuces. And the whole table went crazy. Like, oh, my God, that's awesome, you know. But really, Scott, what am I supposed to do there? I mean, am I supposed to say protect your cards? Am I supposed to say I know you have an ace, so I'm calling because you probably are dead to your other card? Or I didn't know what to do. I was like, holy oh, my God, I can see this guy's hand.
Yeah. No, it's a tough call because you're in the middle of the hand. I mean, if I was not in the hand, you know, I guess regardless, I'm waiting for the hand to end.
Yeah.
Because once you're in the hand, that's, you know, you can't. You want to be a nice guy, but at the same time, you know, your money's on the line here, and if somebody's not protecting their hand, that's their problem. But I definitely would probably say something to him after the hand that, you know, hey, you know, you might want to. Just well, because there's nobody sitting behind you doesn't mean that.
Well, the thing was, is I busted him, and then he got up and left too. So it wasn't like I was going to go over and talk to him and say, hey.
Well, that's true. That's true.
But yeah, I was like, wow, I can see this guy's cards. We've always talked about it before about, hey, man, when you're checking your cards, you know, I can see them. You're flashing them, so you might want to protect your hand. But in this case, I'm in the middle of the hand, and I'm, like, gazing outside thinking to myself, you know, what hand does he have? And all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, I know what hand he has. There it is. There's an ace right there staring me in the face. And it's not – I don't think it's the ace of spades, so he can't be on a flush draw, so he must be dead to his other three cards. I call. And I had a pair of deuces, and they held up. And, I mean, he could have had anything there, but really, I didn't think he had an eight or a four, you know. I didn't think he called a raise or an ace four. An ace eight, you know, more power to him, you know, whatever. But
yeah. Did you happen to catch his name? Was it Pot Ripper? Because wouldn't that be hilarious?
Oh, man, that'd be cool. Get a taste of his own medicine. But yeah, I got to tell you, Scott, you know, you ranted a little bit early on in the show, and here comes my rant.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was announced this week in the magazine, Bluff had their Reader's Choice Awards revealed, and we came in second this year, which, you know what, I'm just as proud for second as anything else, because I know the nation rallied together and helped vote and give us second place. But I have a problem with this. I think this is a bogus result. Now, here's my reasoning. They said Poker Road won the gold and we won silver, okay? But here's the problem. If you recall, when you could vote for this award, they had all of the Poker Road shows listed. So every one of those shows got votes, and then they combined all of those as if Poker Road's website was one whole show.
Oh, wow.
And that is not fair. We clearly won this award again. So I will continue to say you are listening to the best poker podcast on the internet, because we are the best poker podcast on the internet. Bluff's awards are bogus. Or at least their voting tabulation is bogus, because obviously you can't take pride in an award that you're calling bogus. So I'm going to say that the award is important, but the the way that they tabulate it was totally incorrect, totally misleading, and just baloney. It's like saying, okay, the worst third baseman on the Yankees gets to be an all-star because the Yankees as a whole got the most votes for all-star voting. That's not right. You don't put the entire Yankee team out there on, you know, July 4th weekend because they got the most votes as a team. No, each individual gets to get the recognition. We had the most votes for a single show easily. We were the Bluff winner, and that's the end of my rant. But just remember that when I say we're the best show on the internet, we are, and I firmly believe it.
Well, you know, in their defense, I'm not a very good third baseman, so.
Hey, I played third base in high school.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you never went to third base in high school.
No, that's true. Very good. Well played.
Well,
but, you know, one of the reasons that we are the best poker podcast on the planet, regardless of what other magazines might say, is that we offer a free roll once a month to all of our listeners and our readers. And last night you played in one. I, of course, was over at the Lebedard tournament, so I could not play in it. But you had to maneuver through what sounds like a very chaotic field to win your seat. Is that not correct?
308 players for a stud free roll. You know, we have to do something about the password. You know, we had dozens of freeloaders from Russia and Brazil last night.
Well, let me make a quick mention about the Russians, because they were in the last one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I checked our web logs, and it turns out that our AJ Benza show was popular all around the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, I traced back some Russian sites that were on our web logs, and I'm not very good at Russian. Yeah, it took about 3 days of it in high school, and that was just during Rocky IV. And, but, you know, I was going through the whole website, and then all of a sudden, I can understand AJ Benza and Anti Up. So, those folks really like that show. Now, you know, I can't say whether they've actually turned into Anti Up International since then, but, you know, I think it's a little different than our Brazilian contingent that seems to have just locked into it. But anyhow, go on.
Well, to mention the Brazilian contingent on today's show, you can't do it without mentioning a guy named Manuel. I guess his name was like Manuel Braz, like Brasilia or whatever. I don't know. But this was a very interesting man last night, and we have to have a little conversation about it. First of all, yes, I won my seat last night in the free roll, so that means I think I won the contest, too, about which one of the Annie Up hosts was going to cash first. I essentially consider this a cash, so yay to me. But listen, so anyway, I was chip leader early on, which was pretty cool, and the blinds got all wacky, as they always do in these kind of things, and I was hanging around the bubble for about 2 hours. Finally, bubble play, we're doing hand for hand, and I'm literally the last paying spot. I'm in 28th place. And I'm folding and folding and folding. And finally, the guy who's underneath me goes all in. And then I'm like, all right, this could be it. He doesn't have that much money. This could be it, you know. Four other players at his table call him. So you know why they're calling, because they want to go to bed. They want to knock this guy out. Let's get this over with, because we all get paid the same thing.
Exactly.
Right? Fourth Street comes, and this goober, Manuel, whatever his name is, also, by the way, I'm told that he is the person responsible for giving out the password to this Brazilian contingent. He bets out on 4th Street, okay? He forces all the other guys out and goes heads up with this guy.
Oh, my God.
Okay, when instead they're trying to knock him out so they can all go to bed, they can all get their seat, he now turns it from a possible 28 cards against 7 cards into 7 cards versus 7 cards. Now, I understand the whole ethical thing. We've talked about it before, but really, this is clearly something that, you know, he should not have done. And you know what happened, Scott? The guy who's underneath
I can only imagine.
The bubble guy goes runner, 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 runner for a steel wheel. He makes a straight flush, ace to five, more than triples up, and now I'm in a battle for my tournament life because we're essentially even again in chips. And the blinds are like, or not the blinds, but the ante is like, I don't know, 200 or 200, and the betting limits are like 1,000, 2,000, and I have 4,000. So I'm like, please, oh please, let something happen. If you grab the dictionary, Scott, and you looked up the word justice, you would see this Manuel guy's avatar, because here's what happens. A few hands later, this bubble guy again gets it all in, so I'm still the number 28 spot, and three other guys call the all in, including this Manuel guy. When 4th Street comes, Manuel bets out, and someone plays back at him. Manuel ends up having to get all of his money in, and guess what? He goes out. The bubble guy actually wins half the split pot, or the main pot, and now Manuel goes out on the bubble. This was total justice. Total justice. So first this guy gives out the password, and we get all these freeloaders. And then he almost causes me to miss the bubble, and 27 other guys have to hang around for another half an hour because he bets out. And now he ends up being the one who doesn't make it to the tournament.
Now, I do feel, you have to feel a little less angry at him since the guy got the steel wheel, because I'm guessing no one else that was forced out would have had a higher straight flush. Am I correct?
No, Scott, you're not correct, and you sound like Gene last night. My wife says,
oh, that's true,
no,
because it's stud, so the cards.
I said it's stud. Everyone else would have got a bunch of cards. He wouldn't have made a steel wheel.
Yes, you were so right. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm load weary.
Plus, there's a random card generator involved, so if it was hold, wouldn't have made it. So you know, anyway, I was just really happy. I won my spot. I won my seat for free. And you know what the best part was at the end? They list all the players who got the seat, and because alphabetically my name was first, it looks like I won the tournament. I want my banana. I want a banana. It's the first time my name has been first on anything H-related.
You're like those guys in the Yellow Pages that name themselves AAA
Zebras. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I owe a huge favor to Mickey J, who was on my right, and every time I had to do a bring-in, everybody would fold. And he had a couple times he had a higher kicker, higher face card, door card than me. And he's like, I'm folding. I don't need to get involved. And I'm like, yeah, baby. Yeah, give me a walk.
Give me a walk.
So he gave me like two walks to help me survive, and I appreciate that very much.
I'm sorry, I feel bad that I missed it, but I will be there for the actual event number 3 on April 8th, I believe it is, that Wednesday, right?
Yep, April 8th. And also, don't forget, too, that it's a stud event again, so now now all of a sudden I love this game, because I won a $5.50 seat, and now I'm going to be unstoppable on the main event.
Excellent. It's 9 p.m., and let all your friends in... nations around Brazil know that the password that the password is anteup, A-N-T-E-U-P, and come out and join us. It's 5+50. And I did send off an email to our PokerStars contact this morning just to see whether the Brain Trust there has any ideas on what we could do to kind of limit the interlopers. We've had a big discussion on anteupmagazine.com/forum about this. You can go and check those all out and see all the arguments, and I know it sounds easy to a lot of people, but it's a very complicated process. So we'll see what PokerStar says, but you know, if nothing else happens, you know, remember, it's a free roll, folks.
Yeah.
Have fun with it. Now, real quick, before we go on the news desk, I just want to give a shout-out to El Snarfo Grande, who was in town last weekend. I got to play some cards with him. We terrorized a couple old ladies at the Omaha 8 table over at Silks, which is always fun to do. And then one more shameless plug for our upcoming cruise. So, you know, if you can't come to Tampa and play cards with us at the Silks, come on the Anteup Cruise August 20th to 24th, and you're stuck with us on a boat for 4 days. We can't hide. Chris can't hide from you. Well, I guess he could. Maybe. You know, remember the first 10 people to book, save $50. But I did get a call yesterday, Chris, from a leader of a group of 40 people.
Awesome.
They cruise every August, and they're ecstatic about our coming up cruise. I think they're going to call the travel agent today. So if you're one of those people that wanted to save the $50, but it's not going to fill up quickly, you might want to call the travel agent right away and save that $50 before that big group gets in, because only 10 people get it, and that's a group of 40. And I'm not so good at math, but I'm pretty sure that's enough people.
I think 40 covers 10. Euclidean math, I think, is where I learned that. Euclidean math in sophomore year in high school. Hey, you know what? I think it's time to get to the Anteup News Desk.
All right, let's do it. The three judges on Washington State's Division I Court of Appeals have ruled that the state's interest in regulating gambling outweighs the burdens on interstate commerce, rejecting a bid to overturn a law that makes playing online poker in that state a felony. And that comes from PokerListings.com.
Sad.
Bummer.
Sad.
Very still a sad. Felony. I still can't believe it.
Yeah, you know, with all the victories we've had on this side of the country, you would think that they would fall right in line. But, you know, some people are just stubborn. They just don't see the big picture.
PokerStars assigned European Poker Tour regular Johnny Laudon to its team of pros, Card Player reports. Laudon is the first Norwegian player to join the team.
Did you watch the European World Series?
I have not yet, no.
Yeah, Johnny Laudon is on there. He's a very good player. He goes pretty deep, and it's a big pickup for the Stars contingent because he's a real good player. I saw him play.
Well, it's one more of the PokerStars' big bids to get around the world. I mean, they have the European Poker Tour and all these other poker tours, and just becoming a worldwide place to play poker. So
It's perfect.
Congratulations to Johnny. And finally, Dan Cypra of Poker News Daily reports that Ultimate Fighting Championship may be on the verge of replacing Full Tilt Poker as its league sponsor with Absolute Poker.
Wow. Very interesting.
You know, yeah, and I guess I didn't really realize that Full Tilt was sponsoring UFC because I mean, I'm just now kind of getting into the UFC. Because generally when I'm watching it at home, I come home, my wife comes home and goes, "What are you watching?" And I'm like, you know, flip the channel. But, you know, a lot of Full Tilt stuff were big brawls and, you know, their Sunday tournaments and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see if this actually happens. Of course, it's all based on sources right now. So,
well, you know, there's a lot of cheating on the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So this falls right in line with Absolute Poker picking up the sponsoring. Well, all right. We're using Skype today and, you know, you're across the state and I'm over here. So it's hard for you to hear it. But the hotline actually is ringing here in my bedroom.
Very good.
So it's 813-448-1120. If you call the Antiup hotline and we use it, Scott will find something really pretty on the swag shelf and mail it to you. So this one's from Mike from New Jersey. Let's take a listen.
So the question is about deception. So people will ask what your hand is. Say, you make a set, you flop a set there, what happened? I don't usually get involved and tell people either way. I just say, you know, do what you want to do, and you know, I don't try to give any information either way. And people have been accused of, you know, lying or whatever when they're directly asked. And it is poker. So I'm just curious. I mean, I feel it can go either way, but I thought it would be something interesting to talk about as a topic.
So, you know, this is one of the reasons that I don't like No Limit Hold'em. And not to say that you can't be using deception in Limit Hold'em, but it's generally a No Limit Hold'em.
Yeah.
You know, when you get that whole Mexican standoff kind of, whatever that is.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, what you got? Can you beat this? And I just hate that stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So here's what that, you know, this is what Mike's talking about. You know, it sounds like he's not a big fan of it either, but does it work? Or is there a reason that you should be deceptive in answering these questions when people pose them to you?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm from the school of don't talk, you know, because I don't think I'm good enough to talk. But, you know, occasionally I'll watch on TV and hear what they have to say and then think about why they're saying those things. And then if the whole psychology of it makes sense, I might pull out one of those lines when I'm in that same kind of situation. But really, the beauty of the human mind is that it's so insecure that it can come up with all different kinds of scenarios all by itself without you having to contribute to it. So if you just sit there quiet, the guy who wants the information will probably come up with the wrong answer anyway, which is why he's playing at your level. So I would think that just keep your mouth shut and let them, you know, people say, oh, well, if you're quiet, then that means that you're nervous to talk. And if you're nervous to talk, that means you don't have a good hand. And other people say, well, if you're quiet, then you must have a monster and you don't want to give anything away to make them fold. So, you know, no matter what you do, they're going to come up with another reason to not do what you did. So
exactly.
I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and sit there.
But interesting. I'm sure a lot of our nationals probably think differently. So we'll see.
Yeah, but unless you had a few Bush lights, then.
Yeah, that's true.
Then you love to talk. So, see, that's the other thing, too. Now you have to worry about alcohol consumption, and it's just, I think that, just sit there and be quiet. That's the best thing I'd say. I don't see any reason to deceive, unless you're, you know, you're totally comfortable with it, and you've been doing it your whole life. All right, well, apparently, our mailbag is just overflowing.
Whoa, wait, don't forget about our swag from Mike from New Jersey.
You know, I'm thinking
just because
that,
I'm on the road doesn't mean I'm not going to be able to send swag out when I get back.
But you can't spin the wheel. You're a... You know, where are you anyway? We're Palmetto. Where the hell are you anyway? What city are you in?
In Plantation.
Oh, Plantation. Yeah. So how are you?
I haven't seen the Plantation
wheel
yet here, but that's the name of the city.
Well, we usually have the wheel in the studio. I got this little small pinwheel here that I was saving for 4th of July. But if you want, I can spin it.
It's our emergency backup swag right. Shelf wheel. So
right,
yeah,
I'm going to spin it here. It's not going to go around for a long time. So here we go.
Just give it a tickle.
A tickle.
Oh, all right, Mike from New Jersey, you win the Book of Bluffs. That's from twbookmark.com. Wonderful reading, and maybe they have something in there about deception.
Now is it okay to open up the mailbag?
We may move on to the mailbag now. Yes, you have granted permission.
All right, well, why don't you read it, since I know you printed it out and took it with you for careful bathroom reading when you were on the road.
Yes, because that little brick breaker on my BlackBerry isn't good enough. Comes from Nick, who goes by Slick City.
Yep.
And he very simply he goes on and talks about how we talk about you know, level this and level that on the show, and he wants to know, what is level 3 and level 4 thinking?
Sometimes I forget, you know, we do this every periodically, that a lot of times we'll throw things around on the show that, you know, people don't know what we're talking about, and we started out as an educational show, and we still are, but sometimes we tend to get away from that and forget that some people don't know what those things are. So I know that level zero is that I know nothing. That's what level zero is.
Yeah, this has been made famous by, of course, one of the great authors, Davis Glansky. And I think it was first in his book, No Limit Hold'em Theory and Practice. But,
yeah, I think that's right.
You know, he's written so many books, who knows. But, yeah, so level zero, I know nothing. So, essentially, you've been pounding the 99-cent beers to Daniel Highlight all night. not that I had know anything about that. You can't even figure out what you have. level zero for a zero.
Now, level one is basically, what do I have? I know what my cards are. I'm playing my cards.
And that's pretty much the basic for beginners. You know, you just want to focus on what you have and looking at the board and seeing, you know, how good your hand might be compared to a general random hand. So yep. It's always good to know.
Level two is thinking about, what does my opponent have?
Yep, so now you've figured out what you have. So now you need to put your opponent on a hand and figure out whether your hand is actually better. Because even if you have just ace high, maybe it's better than his or her king high if you could put him on something.
So now here comes the fun part. This is what he was asking about. Level three is, what does my opponent think that I have? So that I can act according to that way.
Yeah, exactly. So now you're not so much worried about what you have. You're worried about what your opponent thinks you have and whether you could play to that, if it makes it in your favor or against that.
Yep.
So if your opponent thinks maybe you're on a flush draw and that fourth or that third flush, the flush gets there, then maybe now you can act like you actually made it even though you didn't.
Yeah, you almost screwed that up, but you corrected it, so very good.
Yeah, well, you know, I came around full circle.
level four is, what does my opponent think that I think that he has?
Now we're getting to this whole thing, and Chris, I know you're a big fan of Friends when it was on. There was a big episode towards the end, you know, the one that everybody finds out, I think that was the name of it, because all the shows started with the one that, when they all figured out that Monica and Chandler were dating.
Yeah, yeah.
And Phoebe got to the, they don't know that I know that you know that I don't know that I don't know. And that's exactly what's going on here.
And it was funny, too, because when you watch the episode, too, it totally makes sense. And when she's saying it, you follow it completely. But it's hilarious to think about. It's exactly what happens in poker, because you're thinking, all right, well, does he think that I think he has an ace high flush draw here? Because if he thinks that, then I would, you know, how I would react, you know, so it's all this extra levels of thinking, and, you know, that's why they have a clock, you know, because by the time you're getting through all these scenarios in your head and trying to counteract them, you know, it's been 20 minutes and the sun is set, so you need to have a clock in the game for these kinds of levels of thinking. And, of course, the final level is level five. What does my opponent think that I think they think that I have? So.
Yes.
That's just insane, but you know, if you're thinking at level five and executing it, then you're not listening to our show.
Yes, that's true. That is true. Or even maybe level four.
Yeah, even maybe level four. You know what? Sometimes level zero fits right in. That's what I was thinking last night when I was playing stud, I got to tell you. But a great question. You know, I'm glad they brought it up. I never really gave that any consideration. I always thought, you know, I sometimes think about, you know, I'm such a fan of poker that everyone's a fan of poker and they've all dissected all this stuff too. And that's not right. We shouldn't think that way.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, give that little pinwheel
a little
tickle.
Pinwheel a tickle. Here we go.
Well, Nick, I don't know whether they're level threes or level fours of these, but you've won a great set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com, so at least you know you'll master level one. What do you have?
That's very good.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Dull Blade. It's mixed games again, which means a shorthanded table. We are four players and in the triple draw rotation.
Oh, I don't think there's any harm in that, sir.
Before we can even look at our cards, the under the gun raises one bet. On the button, I look down at nine of diamonds, two of spades, jack of hearts, seven of spades, eight of clubs. I'm going to call here, not so much that we have a rough eight with an 8-7 deuce, But we have 3 to an 87 with a 2 in our hand, which makes a huge difference on the button. Both blinds call, and all four players start drawing cards. The small blind and big blind draw 2. Our under-the-gun raiser just draw 1, and I'm going to discard my 9 and my jack and replace it with a 5 and an ace. Our blinds check, and as expected, the under-the-gun is going to make a bet, but I'm going to call because I improved. But I'm going to have to be careful.
Do you mind if I tag along?
Surprisingly, the blinds call, and on our second draw, everybody draws 1 card. Obviously, I'm throwing my ace, and I replace it with a 4. We just made our rough 8.
Let me ask you something.
Let's see what happened. Whoa, the small blind just bet, and the big blind just called, and the end of the gun just raised. The pot is now 18 big bets, and it's 2 big bets to you.
Oh, just one more thing.
Are you going to the showdown?
You know, I think that we're probably beat here. I don't think we go to showdown. I think we just let it go. What about you? What do you think? You should let it
yeah,
go?
Well, you know, here's the thing. We're in position, which is always a good thing in triple draw, but it's only good because you can react to the other action around you.
Right.
And I think the other action around us is letting us know that there's probably a better spot for our chips to go in.
Yeah.
And right now they belong, what we have in our stack needs to probably belong in our stack and that we need to get out of this.
All right, let's see if he reacts appropriately in part 2.
Welcome back. Like in Omaha, starting cards make a big difference. Yes, we have a 2, which is the key to drawing a triple draw, but we resigned ourselves to having the rough 8 in the hopes that the other players would drop. Not only did they stick with us, but after drawing a single card in the last draw, the blinds bet knowing that the under the gun would raise if he made his hand.
It doesn't always work out, does it, sir?
Despite the fact that I could break up my 8 and take another draw, it would be as foolish as purchasing a lottery ticket. I'm folding. And apparently the big blind is admitting his mistake because he's folding also. So the small blind and the under the gun are going to showdown. The small blind calls, they both stand pat, which seems like an easy decision at this point, and confirms we made the right decision also. After a final round bet and a call, the under the gun shows a really weak 86, and the small blind shows a 76 and collects his 25 bets from the pot. Until next time, this is Columbo at PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, reminding you to recognize when the tides have turned against you and your strategy is out the window.
Well, well deduced there, Columbo. Very nice job.
Nice job. Nice way to get away from it.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited. He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
You know, Chris, we both probably have a lot of affection for folks that are just everyday kind of poker people, just like the game, and just have a desire to make it more than just a hobby, make it their vocation, kind of like we have. And today's guest is somebody who's done the exact same thing, Frank Wiese. He's the author of a new book called Eat Professional Poker Players Alive. He's also writing a lot of columns for different publications around the world and just a generally good guy. Frank, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, good. Well, obviously, we want to talk about this book a lot here, but let's get to know Frank Wiese here a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your background and when that background and poker intersected, and then how it ended up turning into this book.
I originally started out as a blackjack player. I got to be very good. It was not one thing for counting cards or anything like that. It was just, you know, making the right decisions and having a lot of luck. Well, it didn't take long for me to realize that blackjack is just more than just a game of chance, but there's some skill, but for the most part, it's chance. And when I was starting out, I would just go to Vegas, I'd go all over Chicagoland area, and I'd win thousands playing blackjack just so I could go and try to learn the game of Texas Hold'em. I would funnel all my money from blackjack into Texas Hold'em, and then call right back and win it all back in blackjack and feed all back into Texas Hold'em. And after a while, it got really frustrating. So I decided to start reading poker books. I read every single one I'd get my hands on. And as I came about, it got easier and easier. And I understand that there was rules and reading players. And it got to be a little more involved. And then after a while, I noticed something. I was becoming a better Texas Hold'em player than I was blackjack. And then I noticed that there was a lot of gaps in a lot of poker books. The stuff that I read and tried, it didn't work. And then I started picking ideas from different books, different shows, just basically what I've learned from, I guess you could say I'm a TiVo junkie too when it comes to the World Poker Tour and World Series of Poker and High Stakes Poker and Poker After Dark.
You read every book out there, and then you mentioned that there were some holes in there that things didn't work out exactly the way you thought they would or didn't work for you. Can you give us sort of an example of what you were talking about as far as like a book that maybe has a hole in it or just anything in general?
I don't want to knock Danny Negreanu. He's an awesome player. Uh-huh. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a great player. Anybody will agree that he's a great player. But on this latest book is Power Hold'em Strategy. It's, in my opinion, very fluffy. It gets you in the area of, okay, let's play the small ball mentality. Let's limp in with every single hand we can. Let's limit our risk, and let's hope for the best. He has several other poker book authors out there in this book, you know, from Todd Bunsen to Evelyn Ng to Eric Lindgren and Paul Wasikow and stuff like that. And it's really well-rounded book in that aspect that it shows so many different players in the same book, and that was kind of the idea that I wanted to do with my book. I got a couple of different players that I admired and I respected in my book, and when it gets to the small ball strategy, it leads you to, okay, commit to this strategy and have faith, and it works. But the problem is, with the small ball, if I teach everybody that, you know, play every hand, that's really the right way to think if you have years and years of experience on post-flop play. A lot of players out there, you know, they're all either going all in with their aces or they're bluffing at the river. And for me, I felt that it was very misleading in the way he laid it out. And when I got really motivated about making my book, I decided to take the medium ball strategy, which is not as many hands as you would play if you're small ball. And when you're approached with these small ball players attempting to play all these high hands with 2-6 and 4-9 and just crazy off-the-wall hands that people just don't know any better or they're bored, and by attacking them with this medium ball strategy, you're going a good size raise on the pre-flop or as the flop comes. You're wanting to push players off of hands. You're wanting to isolate it one-on-one. I like one time to set up a challenge, one time, with maybe 20,000 in chips, heads up against Daniel, to really explain to him the ideas and the concepts I have for countering his strategy. And that's still going to be a work in progress, but it's going to happen eventually. I mean, you talk about, you know, that book there, that's a real key one. I mean, if you go, you Google it anywhere, you'll hear the word fluffy a lot. But it is a great book, don't get me wrong, it's just, it's going to lead somebody who has $5,000 in their bankroll into a lot of trouble, in my opinion.
Well, Frank, you touched on something I think is important for poker books, and I think it's a real challenge, actually, is how to keep a book relevant as the game continues to evolve. Have you put any thought into that on how to make eat professional poker players alive, have a little longer shelf life than perhaps some of these other poker books that have come out the last couple of years?
Yes, I did try to make it very well-rounded. I touched on many things. I didn't just touch just on Hold'em. I decided to go ahead and take it one step further. I went on with even Deuce 7 Triple Draw. I mentioned some stuff about Omaha, high-low and high. I went even farther and jumped all over horse, because horse is taking off, finally, after the Chip Reese tournaments, and everybody's seeing how much fun it is to play five different games in the same game. And I even took it to Raz and Stud Hilo. I touched on some things that I think is very relevant nowadays, like your Peter Eastgates that played mostly online and then all of a sudden jumps to Vegas and wins the main event. I dedicated a chapter on table image and how you should approach yourself in situations. You're not going to be flying into Vegas in an all-nice suit and thinking you're a high-rolling professional poker player. You know, it's better to wear just a T-shirt with some obnoxious saying on there and talk with the players at the table. I sent another chapter out there on moving from online to playing live, which is really the fundamentals that I have not seen in any poker book. I mean, how you can turn yourself into a live player if all you've ever played was online. I mean, there's so many tells that you're going to be giving off, and you don't even know it because you've never been in that situation.
Now, you mentioned that you had a lot of help and support from a lot of big people, and I know Jerry Yang is a big part of your book. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with the former champ.
I guess it all started back when 2007 started off. You know, Jerry was a real humble guy. He got into the tournament with a $225 satellite, and he's told me the whole story about how, you know, when he got to Vegas, he didn't even know where he was going to stay. He was just completely blown away by 6,000-plus players in one room. And I went watched, you know, and I saw a lot of this on the World Series of Poker as it was coming out every Tuesday night. And I watched, and I picked him, and I picked Lee Childs. One of those two were going to win the main event as I'm watching this. I had no idea who actually won it at the time I started watching this. And it was really amazing watching, you know, people like Kenny Tran and just talk players out of hands. And it was really exciting to see Scotty Wynn do the things that he did before he fell out. I made it a mission of mine to be able to one day get a hold of him. And it was really unique. I actually did it through MySpace. The luck of all that.
Wow.
I approached him with what I had for my book, and I said, Jerry, I want you to be the first pro to actually read my book and tell me what you think. And I sent it to him, and about 2 or 3 weeks later, he gets back, and he couldn't be quiet about it. He was so ecstatic about it, and it kind of went from there. Later on, we arranged a trip out at Bay 101 Casino, and we actually went in some tournaments together, and the casinos actually put bounties on us. It was a real good time. I played in some cash games with them, and we just kind of started our relationship from there. And then later on, when he wrote the recommendation for the cover of my book, then I knew that I had something good here. Because if somebody like Jerry Yang, who's a 2007 main event champ, ain't going to put his name on something he doesn't believe in.
Tell us a little bit about your success, too, at the table. Tell us, you know, what kind of games you prefer to play, what kind of limits do you play, and what your plans are for the upcoming year.
My favorite of all the things that I get to do is playing sit and go. I wouldn't say that I'm an expert, but I'm pretty close at mastering bubble play. I'm not happy unless I'm first, second, or third, and I use that as my motivation. If there's going to be 9 players at the table, there is no excuse to put yourself at risk to not at least get your buy-in back in third place. And I spend a lot of my time playing. If my paycheck's $1,000 or $2,000 for the week, I'll spend 25% of my paychecks and use them for just mainly sit and goes. And the sit and goes are 115 or 515. Those are pretty much the limits I've been playing. Every once in a while, just for kicks, I'll play a $50 sit and go just because I like to experience what some of those smaller buy-in players are thinking, and it really emphasizes the fact that how much more important it is to play when you're playing in a higher stakes. I mean, normally you shouldn't jump in stakes that you're not comfortable with, but for me, I will play a bunch of smaller buy-in events just so that it conditions me for playing a higher buy-in stake, and that's pretty much what I would do. I'll win a lot of sit-and-goes, and then usually when I'm heads-up in these sit-and-go events, I can jump and play a multi-table event. Maybe 70 to 150 players, and they'll be small. They'll be like a $50 to $200 buy-in, and I'll consistently final table those too. And it's it's a strategy that I've been working on for a long time, and I have it splattered all over this book, and I really want to share it with anybody who has never sat down at the poker table before and is excited and tried and curious, but just never had the blueprint for it.
Well, I imagine you'll get into this in your book a little bit, but I'm intrigued, and I think probably a lot of our listeners are intrigued too, about what you notice at what you call the smaller stakes tables versus the big stakes, and what is most noticeable between those two.
Well, the biggest thing is, I'm first sitting at a $1 and $2 table, and everybody at the table is going to have $50 in front of them. $50 to $100 usually. That's how it is in Florida, I believe. It's the same way up here, except for we could probably have about $200 to $300. When you're sitting there flopping the full house, you'll notice that people are going to just minimum bet your way through things. And people are not going to fold in the smaller stakes. They're just curious to see what you're doing. And you have to consistently be very deceptive in that aspect, because if you can't pull any kind of well-timed bluff, you're just asking for trouble. And the things that you get away with in smaller stakes, it's pretty much cut straight and forward. You're always going to have somebody call you down, and that's just something you're going to have to deal with, because the people in small stakes, this is all they have. They don't know any better. They're going to continue to pay you off because they're not going to believe you. When you step up into the higher stakes, what I've noticed is poker is more pure poker. There's less of this, well, I'm going to call you anyway, because the pots are much bigger, the chip stacks, it's much more prestige to get into these events. Not every normal Joe can afford to play $500 buy-in sit and goals or $500 buy-in events. And that's pretty much, you know, where I've been at. I haven't played any $10,000 buy-ins yet, and I plan on it. I plan on playing at least 3 to 4 or 5 events here in the World Series of Poker. But for somebody like me, you know, mid-range is the only thing he's ever played. So to be able to take all that information that I've gained and approach this higher level of stakes, it's real exciting. And it's not going to be this I'm calling you down, because there's just going to be too much at stake.
Excellent. Oh, hey, Frank, we appreciate you being on the show. Again, the book is called Eat Professional Poker Players Alive, and the website is exactly that same thing, right?
Yes.
And what does the book cost?
The book's going for $24.95 U.S., and I'm offering free shipping right now on the book. And then for the worldwide listeners, I provide another link. There's going to be a $10 shipping charge to go worldwide. And the trick is, getting it through my site is the way you can get an autographed copy on the book and an autographed glossy, which is something that I know it's not much, but I wanted to offer something for the people who actually go the extra effort and not have to look at Amazon or Borders or Barnes & Noble to actually go to my site and get it.
This is Cowboy Kenna James, and you're listening to my favorite poker podcast, Ante Up. If you want to play the game, you got to put up the ante.
All right, longtime listener gives us a hand of the week this week, and it came from our free roll, not last night's stud, but the last one, the Pot Limit Omaha one we had.
Oh, yeah.
So not only this has come from a longtime Anti-Up National, but lots of Anti-Uppers are in this hand. But only one, and I hesitate to call anybody a villain if they're an Anti-Up National, you know, unless they're an interloper. But I do have a history with the villain in this hand, so we're going to go ahead and call Hef Mike a villain.
Hef Mike.
Because, you know, he took my Omaha 8 banana right out of my hands last October, and I have not forgotten yet. So he'll always be a villain to me.
Well, he's a villain to me, too, because he quit the Times a long time ago and left me there alone.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But our hero in this hand is Outlaw Jesco.
Okay.
On Poker Stars, he goes by Cornbread TN. Of course, he lives in Tennessee, and guessing he's got an affinity for cornbread.
My God.
And who can blame him?
Yeah, cornbread. Hey, do you have your cornbread with butter?
No, I actually eat mine straight.
Yeah, I like it both ways.
Hmm. Guess it depends on the butter, too. But, I'm going to wash my weight so I don't, hog the whole breakfast bar at the La Quinta next time.
Well, I like to have my cornbread and eat it too. So.
Oh, very nice.
Thank you.
Wow, you've had three nice hands today already.
Thanks, buddy. The show is like getting really close to being like 2 hours long, so let's get on with the hand of the week.
All right, we'll move it on here. All right, so this is level one in the free roll, so we're at 2040 blinds. In fact, it looks like everybody is at 1500, so this might be the first hand. It actually is the first hand of the tournament.
And if you're using level one thinking, you're just wondering what you have.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Thank you very much. I'm here all week.
Oh, excellent. All right, so we got two folds, and it gets to our hero, Cornbread, which is under the gun plus three. Hey, are you going to laugh every time I say Cornbread?
I don't know. I might.
All right, he looks down at a queen of hearts, nine of clubs, jack of diamonds, nine of spades.
Well, this is a pretty decent hand, but I don't really think this is a great hand. I don't know if I'd fold it. But I probably wouldn't raise with it, even though I know everyone likes to come in raising. But you're in pot limit, so you're not going to get that much of a raise in anyway. And all you really have is a pair of nines and a drawing hand. So, and really, you don't have any nut hands here except for straights, and you know the flushes aren't there. So, I don't know. You got a badoogie hand if you throw the nine away. But I don't know. If I'm going to play it, I don't think I'm raising with this hand. So I guess I would just limp. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I'm probably folding this hand.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. It's you got nines, which isn't a great set potential there. You got some sort of gapper connectors here, but you need a 10 to hit. So, I mean, just because you got these three, you're still looking for a 10.
Yep.
And then even then, you might be trumped. So, and nothing suited here, right? Yeah, four different suits.
Yeah, four different suits.
But, you know, first hand early on, I might limp just to see if something big happens. But I think you're probably better off folding here.
Yeah, like I said, I think I would fold this hand, but if I'm going to play, it's going to be a limp. And again, when I'm playing Pot Limit, I'm not looking to make straights, which is really the best hand you're hoping for here unless you flop a boat with a nine, you know. So really, and the odds against that are pretty huge. So I don't like to play straight hands only in this. I want to have some sort of backup. And there's no backup on this hand unless you're making a boat.
Yeah, very little. All right, well, our hero goes ahead and min raises to 80, folds around to the small blind, who calls 60, and then in the big blind is our soon-to-be villain, Hef Mike, who calls the 40.
Yeah, see, you can't tell because we're not in the studio together, but I made a really ugly face when he min raised. I mean, all you're doing really is just making the pot juicy for someone else who clearly has four cards in their hand too, and they can easily make a better hand than you because all you have really are a pair of nines right now. I don't like the raise at all there.
Yeah, we didn't really. I don't think we've really talked on our shows about min raising and pot limit because I think you're right. You're just building the pot a little bit so it's a little bit bigger, and if you get caught and you don't get a good flop. Now there's more money in there that somebody can bet. If you keep it smaller, then it's a little less that people can bet.
Yeah.
And if you're going to raise, I mean, raise it big and try to drive people out, I would think.
Yeah, but the min raise really doesn't accomplish much there. I mean, it may have gotten the two guys behind him to fold, but the blinds are likely going to call with any decent holding, and you're just asking for trouble.
All right, here we go. Flop comes jack of clubs, nine of diamonds, ten of hearts.
Well, see, now here's the problem now. Okay, so we got a decent hand with a bottom set, but again, bottom set in this game is just, it's precarious. It's not something that you can have any faith in. Okay, you got a straight draw, but someone could already have a better straight than you could possibly make. You have to have the board pair, and you actually have one of your own outs to do that. So you're in trouble now. Now what do? Are you really confident in this hand? You can't be.
Yeah, it's a weird flop. I mean, you got bottom set, which is never good. You got 10, which is what you're really hoping to get. So you've got a lot of different outs, but it's such a weird position to be in. The good thing is that I do believe you're in position on this hand, though, so for the rest of the hand. So that does help, I guess.
Yeah, but you did say one thing, that you said that you have outs because you have the 10, but you really don't have outs if somebody has king-queen. You don't have outs anymore. Now, if you hit the 8, you don't have the best straight. You have the ass end, as they say. And that's not good.
All right, well, we'll see. Our hero is feeling good about this flop because he knows that someone probably already is not feeling good about this flop.
Oh, okay, not.
Because somebody already has a straight, but he says he has outs to tie and outs to win. All right, so it's checked by the small blind. Hef Mike bets out 160, and it gets to us.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I guess we're going to have 10 outs or 9 outs on the turn for a full house, you know, in case. But even then, you might not have the best full house.
Full house might not be good.
Yeah, so I don't know how I feel about this hand, but this is This is why, one, we shouldn't have raised, and two, we shouldn't have played the hand. But, I mean, really, I'd want to fold here, to be honest. I'd really want to fold, but I'll probably call because it's so early in the tournament. And if something doesn't turn favorably to me on, you know, on the turn, watch, pardon my pun there, then I'll get away from the hand for 160 more. So, yeah, I guess I'd call.
Yeah, you know, had we not raised preflop, then this bet would have been a little smaller, I think, and I could have felt a little bit of collar. Yeah. The only thing is now that, obviously, you know, generally in these hands of the week, we don't know the opponents, but we know Hef, and he's pretty aggressive, too, so I might take that into account and maybe peeling one off, but I'm going to have to hit big on this next card.
Yeah.
All right, the turn comes to three of... I'm sorry, our hero did call. The turn comes, the three of diamonds.
Did the small blind get out?
Yes.
Okay, so the sorry. Three of diamonds doesn't
yeah,
help
so
us
heads
at all.
So no help here.
So if Hef puts up a pretty big bet here, you know, there's also now the diamond flush draw that he could have backed into with the backup, you know, and if he puts a pretty decent bet out there, I'm going to let the hand go, I think.
Now, you know, before this turn card came out, too, our hero also said that... you know, it is a free roll, and he's thinking about going big or going home, which, you know, in a free roll, you know, it's not a bad strategy, I guess, because you don't want to be playing 3 hours and, you know, fighting over the bubble if somebody yeah. raises and knocks everybody out. You know, not that that would ever happen.
Yeah. but, no, I agree. I mean, it is a free roll. You want to get a lot of chips early and then just cruise to the spot. But still, this seems like your beat to me. So I think I would let the hand go if he makes a big bet here.
Okay, Hef Mike bets 475. That seems like it constitutes a big bet to me.
Yeah, big enough for me to fold.
Yeah, and I'm going to fold too. But it would not be a hand of the week if it went that way. So our hero is going to call and see whether he can get lucky on the river. The river comes to 10 of clubs.
I don't know. I mean, I realize we have a full house here, but I feel like we have the under full, as Lyle Berman likes to call it. And I don't know. I feel like I still feel like we're beat. We got the full, and besides, we're committed now anyway. I mean, how could we have bet?
Yeah,
we bet like 600 into this hot in this hand, and we only started with 15, so we only have 9 left. You know, if he makes a bet and it's half what we have, like 450, I mean, how could you fold a full house? So you're committed anyway. It's just bad space, it's bad position to be in.
Yeah, and here's the weird thing, too, is that, you know, a flop straight seems to make sense for our opponent. It's unlikely that he has the other two tens and has quads, though, you know, maybe got lucky there. And we have one of the jacks, so, you know, he'd have to have the case two jacks. So those are the only two hands that could beat us, right? So.
Well, he could have 9-10, you know, he could have the case 9. And
yeah, that's true. Yeah, another 10.
Or jack 10. He can yep. flop top two with a wrap or something. So
that's true. That's true.
It's possible. I mean, it's Omaha. There's at least 490 cards are dealt every hand, so he's got to have something in there. So, again, I don't think I can get away from it now, but I could have earlier. That's the problem.
All right. Does this change your thinking now? Half Mike checks.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. you know what? I'll just check. You know,
check
I mean,
behind
I
just
think
be
I
lucky.
Check, I think I would check behind.
Be happy to take it the pot.
Yeah. Because Hef's pretty sneaky, too.
You know, that's a good point. Our hero, though, goes ahead and throws the last 785 in. He gets called. Showdown. Our opponent, Hef Mike, shows King of Spades, Queen of Clubs, Four of Hearts, Eight of Spades, straight nine to the King.
Yeah.
And Cornbread went big rather than going home.
Very good. You know, and it... You know, I don't think I would have folded here, so I was committed to the hand, but early on we were beat, and we need to hit one of those, actually what turns out to be nine outs, so I think on the turn of the river, and we got lucky, and that's all there really is to it. I mean, you were in a lot of trouble there, you know, you were dead to the nuts, and he had the absolute nuts on you, and yeah, the check, generally the check means weakness on the end there, because he's not going to want to miss a bet, so yeah, I guess I probably would have shoved my seven on the end. I wouldn't have just checked behind, I probably would have shoved. You know, a lot of times when you're doing the hand of the week too, you're influenced by, usually it's a losing hand, so you're
yeah.
thinking, all right, I might as well fold here because he's going to lose anyway. But really, I think that we should have gotten away from this hand even before the flop.
All right, well, spin that little prize wheel and let's see what we can send out to Outlaw Jesco, aka Cornbread Tennessee. Oh, Outlaw, thank you so much for sending in that great hand of the week. We will send you out a flush card protector from PokerFaces.tv. Send us your address at podcast@antiantmagazine.com. And everybody else out there, send us your mailbag questions, your hands of the week, your comments, your criticisms, your happy birthday wishes to podcast@antiantmagazine.com.
All right, Scott, make sure you take the you know, the alligator alley across carefully. I don't have any insurance policy out on you, and if you go into the gators, I'm screwed because then I don't have a job.
Yeah, I'm a little worried that I think an alligator can actually eat my entire car, so I will be driving considerably fast on the way home.
All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we will see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
All right, let me get it up here. Okay.
Oh. Yeah, get it up, Scott.
Yeah, sorry, Fast Times at Ridgemont High isn't on today.